at this time now, as I'm, nobody will help me with my case.
Hi, I'm Brooke, and you're listening to Actual Innocence, a podcast bringing awareness to wrongful conviction and problems with the justice system. I'm here with DeMarco. How are you doing this week?
We're headed to the Innocence Conference next week, so I'm very excited. And there's so many people that we've interviewed that I'm looking forward to meeting.
Right, me too.
Yeah, and I know that it's going to be a different atmosphere, a different environment, because, you know, we're in Memphis now. I know I'm excited. Leslie Vass, you helped get him here.
So I made an oops when I was helping him schedule his flight. Now he's on a different flight, and we have the same connection in Chicago. So the last leg of our trip, we're going to be flying together.
Oh, that's cool. I get to hang out and chop it and talk, you know, right?
Yeah, I'm excited. And it's Southwest, so we don't even have to worry about trying to find our seats together, because Southwest has got my back.
Southwest, y'all.
So just a reminder that this episode is part 2 of the Christopher Turner episode.
More information on our new project right after this word from our first sponsor. Brooke, I've noticed you had a lot more energy lately. Are you doing something different?
I actually have started taking a new supplement. I know that with my busy schedule, I'm not getting all the vitamins that I need with my on-the-go diet. I've tried other vitamins before, but Ritual is by far the best tasting that I've ever tried.
Did you just say Ritual tastes good?
Yeah, I was surprised too. It's flavored with natural mint essential oils. Plus, it's vegan, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free. Plus, I'm in love with the mint scent that comes from pure peppermint oil.
Wow, that sounds great. Does that mean it's expensive?
No, actually, it's only $30 a month, and it's delivered right to my door. That's so much cheaper than buying each ingredient separately, and I know that Ritual uses the best sourced ingredients. Forget everything you thought you knew about vitamins. Ritual is the brand that's reinventing the experience with 9 essential nutrients women lack the most. If you're ready to invest in your health, do what I did and go to ritual.com/actual. Your future self will thank you for taking Ritual. Consider it your lifelong health 401k. Why put anything but clean ingredients backed by real science in your body? Go to ritual.com/actual.
Go to ritual.com/actual.
Because we're headed to the Innocence Conference this week, I'm not going to be able to send out any swag. Instead of trivia, though, today we are finally going to share with you the details of our new project. DeMarco, do you want to start?
Buried alive. Buried alive is what I was for 22 years, Brooke. So I came with the concept buried alive at least 6 years ago. I knew that when I got out of prison, I wanted to start something and establish a legacy. Because, you know, I was deprived of so much. What I've been through, that's pretty much who I've become. Not literally.
Yeah, your circumstances have made you who you are.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm enjoying telling my story. So I look forward to speaking.
So Buried Alive is a new podcast. And it was actually going to be the second season of the podcast Convicted. But after talking with DeMarco and meeting his family and going through the story, I realized it's its own thing. Like, it's not the second season of Convicted, even though that was what I intended it to be. It is going to be a long form podcast that is going to be 8 or 9 or 10 episodes. And it is going to go into detail about DeMarco's story, his childhood, the circumstances that led to his wrongful conviction, and the circumstances that led to his exoneration. And also, it's going to touch on the societal issues that in general lead to wrongful conviction, that lead to problems in the justice system. And I think it is going to be incredible.
And guess who's putting it together? You and I, Brooke.
It has really great producers, and it's going to start at the end of April. I will let you know as soon as Buried Alive, the feed is active and you could subscribe to it. But we want everybody to listen, because it's so important that we share stories like this and hash out what the issues are that are causing so many wrongful convictions in our society.
Yeah, I definitely want y'all to tune in. And like my wrongful conviction, even the speech that I'm giving March 29th about mass incarceration, you know, it's crazy how all these wrongful convictions, if you can go let out all those innocent people, you know, it might be bed space. And it's a lot of people in there that don't deserve to be in there, that, that deserves a second chance, you know, that's been staying out of trouble from their perspective. So y'all tune in. I'm looking forward to this. I'm very excited. And I thank you, Brooke, for helping me put this together.
Absolutely. It's going to be amazing.
And I really am excited.
So we are now going to play for you part two of our interview with Christopher Turner.
Yeah, I was right. I wrote to everybody who would listen. I wrote 60 Minutes, you name it, I wrote them. I didn't care who, 2020, Barbara Waters, The Innocence Project. I did not write Oprah, but Oprah did a story that changed my life. With her story that she did, I'm going to get into that, and that's what really changed my life, was when I was watching Oprah, and she had a guy on there who... I can't remember, but the book was about, the book was called Coffer Boy. And it's about the atrocities in South Africa. Because I stayed on lockdown so much, I would read anything I could get my hands on. Religion. No. It's called Coffer Boy. It was
I actually know the book he's talking about. That's actually a good book, too.
Yeah, apartheid. I mean, it was really... When you really understand what apartheid was, I mean, it was so deep and so much atrocity going on that this was the first time that I saw somebody in a situation worse than mine, as bad as I thought my situation was. That book made me realize that my situation was not the worst situation in the world. It wasn't until I read that book that I understood. And I began to cry and cry and cry. And I was just wailing. And it just, like, everything came out of me. And for then, it was that book is what made me decide that, Chris, you know what? The only reason you're not an astronaut is the curriculum wasn't given to you. It's not that you don't know it. The only reason why, you know, you get the choice to make this either a modern-day Timbuktu, place of higher learning, or a monastery. It's on you. And these are the things I said to myself. And I began to re-educate myself. I found out that I didn't know a damn thing. I graduated from high school and I went to prison, found out that I didn't know a damn thing. I kid you not. And so I began to read everything. I read so much stuff, you wouldn't even believe it. They used to call me the walking almanac. Mm-hmm. They used to get debates and everybody would come to me. When I was getting locked down, they would lock me down on a tier, I'd be by myself. And they put me all the way at the far end to make sure, you know, because I was filing grievances. Yeah, because I was filing grievances. I began to read the policies, the prison policies, and I learned what they had to do and what was rights and what was privileges. Once you understand the difference between your right and your privileges, and then you understand what they have to do by law, what's required of them. And so you start knowing their job better than they do, because most of the guys, they're not never going to read your handbook. They don't understand the things that you require. But when you know, then you arm yourself with power and information that becomes knowledge, and you can do something with it if you just use it the right way. And so a lot of guys who were medium security and low security, they ain't got no business in a high security prison. So I'm going to get them out. And I began to show different guys that, hey, man, I was reading this case, man, that Jeffrey got, or that my man Tweet got over here. And, man, this case applied to your gun case. And dude's like, man, what was, oh, I don't talk to him, man. He a Crip. Man, I don't care about you talk to him. I'm going to get the case, and I get the case, and I might send the case over by somebody else who happened to be BGF. And I don't know the affiliation, and I didn't understand that. Here I am, and I'm sending guys cases, and the guy like, Chris, man, you can't do that. Man, you send the guy over there to my section. Man, my homie's looking at me funny. Man, this dude, BJ, we don't get along in the state joint. I'm like, well, you're not in the state joint, man. And you say you needed it right then and there, and I got it too, you didn't. So, man, forget all that. And so that's how we begin to break barriers. we begin to break barriers and destroy barriers, because people got a chance to see the genuineness in each other. And so Northern California Mexicans and Southern Mexicans don't get along, and they don't know why they don't get along, other than that that's just the tradition of how it goes. And I used to get on them about, man, you know, that this might be your cousin, this might be your relative, are you stupid? And I used to get on them, and, you know, this is how you talk to the guys. And, you know, I don't know that you're supposed to be a leader with, you know, 1,000 followers and all that. All I know is that this ain't making sense, and you need to make sense. And so we developed camaraderie. And so what happened is I ended up growing up in the federal system. So that's why I have so much different accents in me. People like, you don't talk like you from D.C. You don't sound like you from D.C. You sound like you from the South. Some people sound like you from the Midwest. And some people just don't get it, that sometimes everything come out of me because I've been everywhere. But I've the greatest thing I feel great about is that I was able to help so many different people. And the guys just won't forget about me. They think I have a magic wand that can get everybody out of prison, because I did help a couple of guys get out of prison. And that was one thing I determined. I said, well, if I can't get myself out, if I can help somebody else get out, they'll get mad enough and put me out eventually. And so that's what I used to joke with guys about, that, man, you know what? I'm going to make them put me out of prison. And eventually that's actually what they actually did. You know, people just, they couldn't believe that I was actually going home until I actually went home.
At what point did you get in touch with the Innocence Project?
I'd been in touch with the Innocence Project before, it's actually all the way from its first inception. I started contacting the Innocence Project in 87. At that one point in time, there was only one place. That was Centron Ministry. Yeah, that was Centron. It was a church up in New Jersey. This priest was running it, and he didn't have anything but a nun going through the letters and trying to help innocent people. And I read and seen where they had got a guy out of prison in, like, I think 88. And I was mad at him, because I'm like, hey, my case, I wrote your guys first. I'm innocent, and I sent you the case first. And that's when they wrote me back and politely checked me on that, you know. And so yeah, it didn't stop. It didn't stop. I wrote every member of Congress a letter, personal letter, who was on the Judicial Misconduct Committee. I wrote every one of them their own personal letter. I didn't take one letter and Xerox and then send it to everybody. I sent it to every individual, you know, based off of what I had studied and knew about them and their background. And the first one who wrote me back was Senator Edward Kennedy. He wrote me the first letter, and he asked the FBI to investigate my case. And that gave me momentum. That was like in 2099, 2000. And it gave me so much momentum. And the Innocent Project had just said that they were just upstarting the Mid-Atlantic Innocent Project. And so they were like, we don't have the capabilities, Chris. Sorry, but we got to deny you at this time because we just don't have any resources. And her name was Misty Thomas, and I met her. I had a chance to finally meet her in person last year. And we talked and laughed. And, you know, she was like, I'm so glad I turned this thing over, because she was in charge of it. And she wasn't a lawyer. She didn't have the skills at that time to actually work on it. Innocent cases that actually needed, and she turned it over. And so eventually the rest is history. 2003, they actually took my case officially, which is a whole nother story. You would not believe my journey from California. I actually had to get on a bus. They gave me a bus ticket and $50, and I had to get to DC, and I was supposed to get there in 3 days. And they actually gave me a report to be there in 1 day. And I'm like, 1 day? How am I get in on a bus in 1 day? I'm like, man, they only way they had set up something in my little release plan that I needed to report to CSOSA by 9 o'clock that morning, and Friday, and I was released on a Thursday. And I'm like, well, the only way I'm gonna get here is if, you know, Scotty can beam me over from Star Trek. If you can get Star Trek involved in this, I can make it. Other than that, I'm not gonna make it. I don't know nothing. Yeah, and that's what happened. I kid you not. I missed the bus like 4 times. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Everybody was now at this time when I first. Now this is what happened. They releasing me. They take me through this drawn out thing and like they're debriefing me, like they actually, like I'm coming back from combat. Yeah, like I'm coming back from combat and they're debriefing me about society and about things that's going on. And, you know, it's like I'm in maximum security prison. So they keep in mind they have cell phones. You have to understand they have cell phones in prison and guys had them where I was at. But I didn't have one, and I had never seen one. I knew guys who had them, but guys ain't going to bring them out because they need to keep them concealed. You feel me? So guy don't need to, like, Chris, you want to use? No, I don't want to use it. I need to get out of here. They saying they're going to let me go. I don't believe them, but they saying they're going to let me go.
I've been there.
Yeah, man. And what they, let me tell you, they let me go. And Thursday morning or something in the afternoon. And they had a guy at the camp, the prison camp, another inmate, drove me to the bus station and dropped me off in Modesto, California. And just told me, go in there, they got your bus ticket. That's all. I went in there and the guy said, okay, yeah, your bus be here at such, such time, 2 o'clock. I'm waiting, and my bus don't never come. I'm waiting. I'm sitting out there waiting, and the bus was so finally I go in there and say, hey, ma'am, I've been waiting on the bus to go to D.C. I'm going to D.C. And she's like, that bus came and left an hour ago. And I'm here, and I'm arguing with this lady about this bus not coming, and she tells me that it does. And I'm sitting there and I'm telling her, no, I was out there. I seen you out there with the bus driver and that was not my bus because I'm waiting on a bus to say Washington, D.C. I'm in Modesto, California. Yeah. And I had no idea. And so the guy say, he hit me with the woman. He's like, oh, no, come here. It's my fault. And he highlights the itinerary for me. After I missed this bus, I realized I need some help. I need some help bad. And so it's this gorgeous young lady out there with her child. And I go to approach her and she move away from me. I'm like, hey, look, I need some help. And she move again. I'm looking around for someone else other than this girl because I just know she's just drop dead gorgeous and she probably figured out where I'm coming on to her. And I'm looking for someone else and I don't have anyone else enough. And I just walk over to the girl and I say, look, hey, I'm not trying to come on to you and everything. I need some help. I need a cell phone. I've never had a cell phone. I've never seen a cell phone. I come from that really bad place up the street, that prison. That's where I come from, Atwater. I need some help. I have never seen a cell phone. So she looked at me and stared at me and I guess studied me and studied my face. And then she just opened up. Well, I tell you what, this is what you can do. You can go down the street, make this left turn, go to the spot, go to Cricket, get a Cricket phone. It only costs you $50. I'm like, okay, perfect. That's what I need. She said, get unlimited talk. It gets you unlimited text. And you can talk as much as you want and text as much as you want. I said, okay, thank you. Yeah. And so I run down here and I go down to this store. I get it just like she said, and come back and, you know, now I'm calling people. But before I get back, as soon as I get back to the bus station, it's surrounded with police cars. I mean, literally maybe 15 police cars. And I'm like, oh my God, I knew this was too good to be true. This was just all a setup. This was just a setup to say, well, we let him out and he didn't get on the bus and he stayed up here in California. And I'm just thinking that I'm on my way back to the jail. And then finally, as I get closer, I see them put somebody else in the police car and locking them up. So I guess something happened while I was gone in that period of time, that fast. And so I'm actually relieved. This was the first time I was actually glad someone's getting locked up. It's not me. I'm just like, oh, good.
RX Bar's core ingredients do all the talking. It's simply like eating 3 egg whites, 2 dates, and 6 almonds. With no BS, turns out real food ingredients actual taste really good. Yeah, you can actually taste the cacao, the real fruit, the spices, like sea salt.
Whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, there's an RX bar for you. They come in 11 delicious flavor varieties, and RX bars are gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, with no added sugar.
RX bars are great for a number of occasions. Breakfast on the go, snack at the office, or a post-workout snack.
So which kind was your favorite?
I like the coffee chocolate flavors. They're perfect to take with me to the gym in the morning. They're delicious and convenient.
For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/actual and enter promo code ACTUAL at checkout.
One more time, for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/actual and enter promo code ACTUAL at checkout.
And so I'm steady calling people, and I'm calling. I call my mom, I call my lawyers, and everybody's friend is like, where? Someone has to get there with Chris, and everyone is in panic mode, and I'm calling my cousin, and my cousin is saying, well, no, I'm gonna just get you money, and you're just gonna get on a plane. Just get on a plane.
Just get on a plane, right?
Yeah, and I'm not even thinking, you know, I'm in Modesto, California, and she doesn't even know that the plane is not gonna land in Modesto anytime soon.
And did you have an ID?
No, that's the thing. That's what happened later on when a friend of mine who was actually in with me over the course, and me and him been friends ever since 88, we had met, we became cellies, and we became best friends. And so when I talked to him and told him, well, look, my cousin's just going to send me a plane ticket and all that, he said, Chris, no, slow down, man. Slow down. I've been where you've been. You're not getting a plane ticket. You don't have no ID, so you're not getting on a plane. I'm like, ID? And I'm like, he's like, Chris, just be cool. Just get on the bus and just go ahead, and it's going to get you to your destination. Just take your time. And so so now I'm mad because I'm like, nobody's calling me back because I'm calling people. And I've called these people, and everybody's like, hold up, wait a minute, let's see what we can do. And no one is calling me back. So finally, I get frustrated, and I call my cousin to tell her, look, you can't send me the money because I don't have an ID to get on the plane.
Well, and how would she send it to you anyway? Like you didn't have a bank account, right?
No, she was on Western Union to me. And I'm like, you can't send me. I don't have an ID to get on a plane. So you can't even send me no money. I can't get on no plane.
Right, you couldn't even pick up the money.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I had a prison ID, and that was it, just my release papers saying who I am, and that was it. And so none of this was thought out, and so I say, well, why you didn't call me back earlier? She say, fool, I done called you 5 times. She say, wait a minute, did you turn up the volume on the cell phone, the ringer? I say, what? She say, you have to turn the ring on, idiot. The phone ain't going to ring if you don't turn the ring on. And I'm like, well, nobody told me that, idiot. And so I finally turned the ring on. And now finally I get on my bus. I'm steady. Everybody's in panic mode. And still they like trying to figure out what city can we get him in. And I told them I'm on my way to L.A. now. So I get to L.A. and I go to buy some water and some M&Ms or something. And the guy like, that's $4. I'm like, $4? What? I said, man, you crazy? I'm not no tourist. You're not going to treat me like I'm a tourist, man. I'm not paying you no $4. And so that's the thing about, you don't understand about the inflation. That's the thing that you miss. Nothing prepares you for that. That we're steady in prison arguing that we are overpaying And they're charging us more than the street prices when we don't understand that the cost of living has passed us by in them 20 something years. You know, you don't understand that. And so I get on a bus and I'm leaving LA and I'm going now to, I think I'm going to Phoenix. Yeah, I go to Phoenix. I go to Arizona because I'm in Arizona and I've been on a bus now, I think for a day or so. I think I've been on this bus a whole day now. I've been traveling on buses a whole day. I want to get some toupees. I need some long sleeves because it's getting cold on the bus. Now I left with shorts on and short sleeves from California. And now it's starting to get cold on these buses. And so I meet a guy on the bus, make friends with him. And, you know, he's going traveling somewhere. He's looking for work, going somewhere. He's going East Coast and I'm going East Coast and we're heading the same direction. He's going to Richmond. And I'm going to DC. I'm like, wow, well, that's great. I got somebody who know where they're going. And so we go, I think our next stop, somewhere along the line, I know we stop in New Mexico, Deming, New Mexico or somewhere, the middle of nowhere. I have no idea where it's at. I know that it's New Mexico somewhere. And let me tell you, when you're in New Mexico, they don't have Greyhound stations like I just left in California, LA and Phoenix. I actually went to a Greyhound station or place location. They have like the Greyhound dog at a McDonald's. And that's just it. And that's it. That's where your stop is. And so I get off the bus and I run in a little store somewhere in New Mexico and I run in there and I go get my stuff. I say, I'm going to get some toupees and toothbrush and, you know, I want to get some hoodies because it's cold on the bus. I'm running out of money, but it's cold. And so I go do this stuff and I come out to the bus and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. The lady didn't give me all my stuff. So I didn't know that when you check out and they put it on the little wheel thing around, you're supposed to lift your bags off yourself. And so my other bag, so I run back to go get my other bag because I see the bus still right there. They stopped at the McDonald's and they had so many minutes. And so I come run back out. And as I'm coming out, the bus driver's trying to pull off and I hit on the side of the bus. Hold up, hold. I'm on that bus. Do you know what he told me? Catch the next one. I'm like, is you crazy? I'm in the middle of the street asking, man, is you crazy, man? My papers are on this bus. Everything is on this bus. My charger, my everything. And so I'm like, man, you. And so I'm standing in the middle of the street. I don't know what it was. I was in the middle of the street. And I kid you not, in a Andes with some, I was in a real high volume traffic area. And the guy seen me in the middle of the street looking at the bus and I'm looking around and I am totally lost, totally shocked now. And the guy say, hey, you just got out of prison, didn't you? I look at him like, huh? He's like, I did too. I just came home 6 months ago. You want to catch that bus, don't you? I said, yeah. He said, man, I don't have no gas, but if you give me some gas, I know where that bus is going in Mexico. It is his next stop. We can get over there in time at the Chevron station. So I said, all right, okay, well, if you can get me back on that bus, I have enough gas money. I can get you. And we jump in the guy's car and we zoom. And we run, we're rushing over there and the guy's rushing me over there. And we pull up in the Chevron and I jump out and I'm like, thank you. Okay, I'm going to get you some gas here. I asked the gas attendant, what time do the trailway, do the Greyhound come? And he's like, no, it doesn't stop here. This is at the Chevron around the corner. So I'm like, oh, my God. So we jump in the car, and I tell him, and as we turn the corner to go to the Chevron, the bus is pulling up, and I jump out in the middle of the street and wave at the guy again. Hey, here I go. I need to get on the bus. He said, He pointed. He shut the window on me and told me, catch the next one.
Wow.
The same bus driver. I was so, now.
Now I got to ask, what was his race?
I think he was Hispanic. think he was Hispanic or something. I think he was Hispanic. Yeah, I think he
didn't want to let you.
Had like,
okay, I'm curious. I'm gonna just be quiet. I want to know what's going on. What happens next?
Now, next, I don't have enough money, and I'm in Deming, New Mexico, and there is nothing where I'm at, and so I'm wondering what's going on with my phone, because my phone isn't working no more. And I say, something is going on. I got unlimited talk. I got unlimited text. I should be able to call anybody. So my phone isn't working. So I go and I use a phone and I call my guy, call my friend in Miami, call Joe. And I'm like, man, this bus just left me. Like, look, stop panicking. Stop panicking. He say, find out where Walmart at. I'm going to send you some money. Get a hotel tonight. Just stay there. Catch the bus tomorrow. And I'm like, man, how am I gonna do that? And so it just so happened. I say, the phone doesn't work no more. He say, do you have a charger? I say, no, the charger's on the bus. What charger? Nobody told me about the charger. I guess it's in the box. He's like, yeah, Chris, the phone is no good without the charger. I say, but I got unlimited talk, unlimited text. I should be able to talk unlimited, ain't it? It ain't been a month. I just got the phone. And he's like, no, man. He said, listen, if you separate from the charger, just throw the phone away because it's no good without the charger. So I'm like, all right, I didn't. So no one told me that it didn't have unlimited battery capacity. So so finally, I get to the Walmart. I get some money. And I say, you know what? I'm going to get everything I need, and I'm never getting off the bus again. And that's what I did. I went and brought water. I brought everything I need. So, and now, mind you, my stuff is still on that bus, my parole paper, my release papers, everything. And so I'm like, well, forget it. When I get on this bus now, I don't have to get off. I'll do it. So when I went to go check in the hotel, I found out that two other people had missed the bus. Bus driver had left two other people. She said, it's a busy night. It was a mom and pop hotel. So now I got a phone. Now I'm talking to everybody. I'm telling them what's going on. Now all the lawyers are panicking. My mom's are panicking. Everybody's panicking. And they want to know, how can they get to me? That's it. That's enough, Chris. Forget it. We're coming to you. You're getting on a train. You're getting on a plane. We're coming to you now. We catching a plane. And I'm like, well, I already checked on that. I want y'all to know that the nearest airport is 130 miles away from here.
Wow.
And if I got a train, I could get on a train, but it would take me another week to get there because the train would leave there and go into Louisiana before it heads toward D.C.
Wow. I appreciate that you can laugh about this because this sucks. Like, this is the saddest story I have ever heard in my entire life. And you can laugh at it. And I appreciate that about you so much.
No, I mean, you know, I've done the hard part was the 26 years, you know.
Definitely.
So this is,
yeah,
I feel defeated for you.
Yeah. And so this is now, everything else after that is like ice cream, you know. And so I knew eventually I would get it. I knew eventually I did the hard part. I got out. That was the hard part, was getting on this side. I think after I got on the bus that next morning, I was there early. I was the first one there early. And finally, I got on the bus, got on there with everything I needed. And I thought that was it. Different driver, different bus and everything. And so I'm like, and I asked that bus driver about my stuff. He told me I could just contact Greyhound and hopefully they turned the stuff in when the Greyhound get where it's going and somebody would have turned it in and all that. And turns out eventually nobody ever turned it in. The guy who I befriended on the bus probably took it with him to North Carolina. And so, but anyway, I get on this bus and I say, I'm not getting off this bus. I'm not getting off this bus. That's what I keep telling myself. Well, I get to I'm in New Mexico. So now I think we went somewhere in El Paso. I think the bus went to El Paso somewhere, some kind of way. I know that now the police stopped the bus and everybody has to get off the bus. because they say dogs detected drugs or something on the bus. I'm like, no, this can't be happening. And I get off the bus. Everybody get off the bus. They take everybody off the bus and everything, and they supposed to cause another bus. But when I get off the bus, I'm taking my stuff with me. They say, don't take nothing with you. Everybody leave your belongings on the bus because the dog had detected some type of drugs or something on the bus. That was not applying to me. I was taking my stuff with me. So I took everything when I went off the bus. And eventually they let us get back on the bus. And we're going to our destination. Some kind of way, I know out when we get off the bus, I'm somewhere in Nashville. I'm in Tennessee. Eventually, I know when I get somewhere in Tennessee, I'm not sure now where it's at. I think it was Nashville. But when we get to Tennessee, the bus gets to Tennessee, everybody gets off the bus and break running. And I didn't realize what they were running for, but everybody was running for the charges to charge their phones up at the station. And I'm not paying attention, so I'm looking, so I'm like, okay. So I just figured out, well, okay, I can go in the bathroom and charge mine up. So I'm standing in the doorway of the bathroom because I'm not letting this bus out my sight. Everybody had to get off the bus. I didn't know why, but I said, okay, I'm going to charge my phone up in the bathroom. But this bus is not leaving my sight. So I got the door to the bathroom open, looking at the bus. That bus not leaving. As soon as I see that door open, as soon as I see somebody, one person go on that bus, I'm going on that bus, the driver. The problem was that was the driver's last stop. I was supposed to take another bus. So I missed the bus again. And I'm trapped in Tennessee now. And I think I stayed there the next bus. I stayed there overnight for like 8 hours, I think. 8 hours or something at the bus station in Tennessee. And it was just crazy. Yeah.
Did you have a room were you just wandering, meandering around? Or?
No, I wasn't wandering around. I was just at the bus terminal. It was a nice one. It was clean. You know, I just stayed there and just, you know.
Sat there and waited, pretty much just waited for the next bus, basically.
Waiting for the next one. Yeah, it was just, you know, the hard part was over. I wasn't even worried about, you know, so I talked to a couple of people, was just talking to everybody, calling everybody and, you know, talking. And I was too embarrassed to tell them that I missed the bus again. So I didn't even tell nobody no more because they was already in panic mode all over the place.
Yeah.
Figuring out how they're going to get to Chris. Everyone's just trying to figure out how they're going to get to me. And so eventually, after Tennessee, I think we went into the bus was heading into Richmond. And so after that, once I reached Richmond, it was like a celebration. Like, now it doesn't matter what you do, we're coming to get you. You do anything. I say, look, don't come get me. I'm all right. I'm on the bus because I'm at Richmond Station and I see Union Station. I see the bus say, Union Station, Washington, D.C. It's going to Union Station. So I see Washington, D.C. Finally, I see it. You know, that's what I've been waiting to see because I had traveled on buses before. And, you know, and like I was telling you with my grandmother and all the times we traveled, the bus had always said Washington, D.C. that I can remember. But I wasn't making the decision. She was making the decision. So we knew what buses to get on. And so in California, when I all started, I'm looking for a bus to say Washington, D.C., not knowing that that's not how the itinerary works. And so.
How long did it take you to get there? When did you finally make that? 2-3 days later? 5 days later?
Three and a half days later.
He's on the bus right now. He'll let us know when he gets there.
Yeah, that's funny. So what's going on with your case right now?
Yeah, we actually lost a decision, I think 6 months ago in the Supreme Court. It was a landmark decision. The U.S. Supreme Court actually ruled against us. They ruled that it was improper what the government did to withhold evidence, that it was a Brady violation, but there's a chance that it would not have changed the outcome. Now, two juries said that if they knew the information that was withheld, they would not have voted to convict. any of the defendants.
Well, and with all of the mess of attorneys, like, did you also do ineffective assistance of counsel?
No, we actually never did ineffective assistance of counsel.
Because I can imagine having seven or six or how many ever different attorneys there representing different clients. Like, that's ineffective if the defense is fighting the defense.
Yeah, and let me tell you, some of the attorneys we had Greta Van Susteren from Fox, and her whole thing was she blamed me for messing up the case for her client because she wanted to offer that her client was there, but he wasn't involved in the assault. I said, why would you? Okay, you can do whatever you want to do. I'm not putting myself there. So she wanted to create a joint defense to say that we were there, but we didn't participate in this. I say, is you crazy? So, I mean, I'm a kid and I didn't know any better, but I knew better than to say that I'm somewhere that I'm not. I was like, why would I do that? And she thought that was the best defense. Yeah, you think this is the best defense because you chose not to investigate any of the allegations that we kept telling you. We kept begging the lawyers to just go down there and just look at the crime scene. But as it turns out, no one ever looked at the crime scene. And the biggest thing in the crime scene, how you know the case was, it's not a hoax because a human being lost their life and a personal friend of mine lost his mother in this case. And, you know, he never felt, and her sons never believed that I was guilty of the case. And that was, you know, that day is humbling in a testimony to what they thought about my character in itself. You know, despite all the publicity that went on and all the things, they understood and knew everything would be straight. It would straighten itself out. How could they get convicted? And that's what we all grew up on, believing in Perry Mason, you know, thinking that innocent people don't go to jail back then in 85. We had no idea, you know. You thought that, you know, eventually someone gonna come in there like Paul and, you know, had the critical evidence to say, you know.
So you've been out almost like 8 years, right? So what does your life look like now? Like, since you got off that bus finally, like, what are you doing with yourself?
I've been lost in work. I'm constantly working. When I first came home, I was working an average of like maybe 67 hours a week doing two jobs.
Well, and since you haven't been exonerated, what type of employment were you able to get with your record?
I've been able to get solid employment, and actually is I've hurt myself on a couple of employment opportunities because I've been truthful. I didn't have to bring up the wrongful conviction, but I actually did to let the employer know that, you know, I didn't want you to be blindsided by this on the news. And by the way, you know, I was charged for that wrongfully. And then some people at one job where I was going actually was a promotion. Someone had seen a guy interviewing me, and went back and told the guy, hey, that's that guy that was convicted on that case. Yeah, and so you deal with that, and then you just understand, and I'm just too optimistic to let things like that hinder me or, you know, make me feel like it's mostly like cash labor. I actually work for the Nationals baseball team, and I get a chance to do a lot of little things. I met a lot of great people. So,
and sports is your thing, right? But you were basketball and football, so you have extended to a whole new sport.
Yeah, yeah. But I actually, in prison, I coach basketball teams, football teams, and baseball teams. And one time I actually got shipped when I told you I got transferred from Pennsylvania to Kansas. It was because of the baseball team. Because there was a altercation between two different ethnicity groups. And they say that I could have stopped it because both sides would listen to me. I'm like, man, my sons don't even listen to me. How are you going to tell me some grown men in prison going to listen to me? It ain't my job to do none of this, to stop no riots. You get paid to do that. And so they feel like I didn't do nothing to stop it. And the thing about it is I didn't know anything about it. Or I would have stopped it, you know, because the guys, some of the guys played on my baseball team. A lot of times, like, there's things that I, incidents that I've stopped that they have no idea that I actually stopped or had a hand in it, because we find out what the problem is, go to the root of it, and like, hey, man, can we resolve this? You know, and I met a lot of friends, and there was a lot of guys who, like, did things that made money inside the prison, and guys who had money on the streets, you know, because I was in the federal system. So a lot of guys who were mafiosos and, you know, bosses and Italian, Irish, and different things that, you know, I could go to them and I could say, hey, man, I got a situation here. I need your help. I need you to send this money here and we're going to resolve it and you're going to get your money back. And they already know that if I say they're going to get their money back, they're going to get their money back. And so sometimes we'll step in and I get a guy's money. Look, here go the money the guy owe you. So it's resolved. So now you don't have nothing. He don't owe you anything. He owes me. So he doesn't owe you. So now, you know, if you do anything now you just want to do it. But, you know, you do a lot of things like that because we need the institution open and we needed to operate because I needed to get to the law library every day. The first thing they know, I want to know.
You raised yourself in the prison system. You were a connector. You connected people. Were you able to connect with your family?
Yeah, to a degree, I was. The thing that my family, when I got back, my family that I knew when I was here, that was easy to connect with. A lot of people, it was easy for me to connect with because they knew who I was before I left. But I had nieces and nephews that didn't know who I was before I left, who wasn't born, you know. And so those are the ones that you try to connect with, you try to get them to understand. And for the most part, it takes some time for them to get used to you because you coming out with a different concept. You coming out with like this military background. You know, when you first get home, you're always up early. You're on your feet. You want to get everything done. You need everything to be done like clockwork because that's how it operates and run in prison system. You want a controlled movement, you know? And so, initially, my brother used to be like, man, stop calling me early in the morning, man. Ain't nobody on this military time with you, man.
I can relate.
So I get up early and I used to do things. I ended up getting in a relationship with this girl that I was involved with before I left. And, you know, I used to get up early and try to do things quietly and, you know, not disturb her and go about my business. And eventually she kept accusing me of sneaking around. Why are you so sneaky? What are you so quiet about? And I'm like, that's just what we do. And so we could never agree. She's like, no, you're up to something. I know you are. And I'm like, wow, is it this bad? You know? And so I was just constantly accused of things.
And all you were really trying to do was, you know, be respectful, be quiet. And that's all. I get it. I totally get it.
And I still run into no problems. You know,
I have a question.
Sure.
What happened to the other guys that were found guilty?
Believe it or not, one actually died in prison from an aneurysm while he was playing baseball, softball in Indiana, Stephen Webb. And the other ones were actually granted parole and then they rescinded it for no reason at all. What happened is they're actually still in now, including my brother. And so I told them what we had to do in front of the parole board. I mean, because the parole board believed me. So the same misinformation that was used to convict me was used on those guys. The same misinformation. So for them to say, oh, well, we believe they got it wrong with Chris Turner, but they didn't get it wrong with the other guys is ludicrous. Because it was the same lie told on them that was told on me.
What advice would you give to someone who is being convicted of a crime that they didn't commit?
the best advice is to not stop fighting. You know, reach out to as many groups, many organizations as you can, because eventually your story is going to be heard by the right person with the right ears. And eventually it'll make sense. And hopefully I believe that you'll get the help that you need or desire. And yeah, and so eventually your ears reach the right person. And so I think that's how it works, because I know anybody who contacts me, I immediately try to point them in the direction, or I ask the Innocence Projects to take a look at their case for me. And they do.
So what do you think people like me who have never had that experience can do to help people who are being wrongly convicted?
I think you can continue doing what you're doing right now, like with the work that you're doing, getting the message out, allowing stories to be heard, because someone is going to be inspired by my story somewhere. Somebody will hear my story and they'll have a son, a daughter, a nephew, or uncle, or brother, and they'll reach out and try to contact Chris Turner because they can relate to him. They'll try to reach out to you or DeMarco. They'll try to reach out to us and connect with us, and we can get them pointed in the right direction, because somebody is somewhere not knowing where to go, thinking that their son may commit suicide, or their daughter or something, and they just don't know where to turn and they don't know what to do. You know, it's not about money. Situation like this, money doesn't help, but it's a matter of getting it in front of the right group of people. And I had the privilege of meeting probably the most incredible people, I think, on the planet. You know, because if you're doing the innocence work, you got to be a special person, because you're never going to get compensated for the work you do, no matter how much money they pay you.
If our listeners ask if there's a monetary way they can help, I say, yeah, donate to your local Innocence Network agency.
Yeah, ask. Because if you spend, I mean, that's really what you need to fight these cases. They actually need money. They get so much grant money. Congress has yet to accept the fact that there are innocent people in prison, despite the numbers, despite the constant DNA factors that prove that innocent people go to jail, and actually innocent people have been executed.
This story boggles my mind. I am so frustrated, which makes me so impressed with Christopher's attitude, because despite all of the adversity that he faced, he still has a positive attitude. What did you think?
He didn't seem bitter to me. And people say that, you know, and I know at times everyone has their moments, not just me but everyone, but
I wanted to give up with him. Like when he was telling the bus story, I was like, oh my gosh. Like I wanted to go pick him up.
Hey, that was hilarious.
He's a great storyteller.
Yeah, it was sad for him to, if he was right there. I know how, you know, frustrating it would have been for him, but that was funny.
Just a reminder, there's not going to be an episode next week because we're going to be at the Innocence Conference, but there will be an episode the week after that. And we will keep you posted on when you should subscribe to Buried Alive. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Actual Innocence is hosted by DeMarco Carpenter and Brooke Giddings. Our original music is by Blake Maples. Our transcriptionist is Christina Judge. Our website guru is Sean Cole. Our social media superstar is Cameron Taylor. And our amazing volunteer is Casey Weber. You can visit our website for bonus materials like transcripts, pictures, and a calendar of upcoming episodes.